Welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Neurology. This podcast aims to bring you expert multidisciplinary team and patient perspectives on the importance of integrating practice to enhance the care of patients with multiple sclerosis or MS. This activity is funded by an independent medical education grant from the healthcare business of Merck KGaA, Darmstadt, Germany, and is jointly provided by USF Health and Touch IME. In this podcast, a patient advocate and person living with MS joins two MS specialist neurologists to discuss the importance of understanding the needs and preferences of patients at each treatment decision-making moment.
Hello, my name is Tjalf Ziemsen. I'm a neurologist at the University Clinic Carl Gustav Carus in Germany. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Ms. Nele Handwerker, a person living with MS and a patient advocate, and Professor Tobias Derfus, a neurologist at University Hospital Basel, Switzerland. Together, we will discuss considering the needs and preferences of patients at each treatment decision-making moment. So, probably to start, Nele, so what is shared decision-making? So, from the patient perspective, so I think we have heard a lot and you're reading it into textbook, but what is your, for you as a patient, what is shared decision making?
For me, it means that you as my neurologist are explaining me, of course, you are the expert. You need to explain me what condition am I in. I mean, of course, I feel if I have symptoms, but I don't understand the MRI normally. A normal patient doesn't understand the MRI. A normal patient doesn't want to be bothered with too many informations about MS. He, most of the time, unfortunately, he wants to stay away from the MS. So you have to explain me why I should take certain treatments or symptomatic therapy, and you have to explain me the pros and cons of a certain therapy, which you did back then when we had our first talk and I had to start a treatment. And you explained me like three options that I could have taken and see pros and cons. And I then decided which pros and cons work best with my lifestyle, with me. I was traveling for work and so certain conditions where I have flu symptoms didn't work for me. So I choose then another option, which was not so easy for me to do, but better to combine with my life.
So Tobias, moving to the physician's perspective. So usually I think the physicians, at least generations back, was usually like a little bit like a king, so deciding everything. And we know some colleagues who are really very dominant in this situation. So what is now the attitude, I think, of the modern, innovative, patient-friendly neurologist as Professor Derfus in Basel?
So I think the opinion of the patient is really important, because in the end, it's about adherence to treatment. If you don't have the patient on board agreeing to the treatment, I mean, it doesn't work. And we know from many other chronic diseases that patients are not taking their drugs. And of course, if you don't take the drug, it will not work. So it's really important to have the patient on board from the very start on, and the patient is convinced about this treatment and doesn't have fears about side effects and really takes the treatment. And of course, there are really different perceptions regarding risks and also the fear of an increasing disability. So for some patients, really MS is the center part and they want best disease control possible. And for others, it's about more about side effects and they want really the safest drug available. So it's I explain it always like when you buy a new car and you make your insurance, some people want full coverage and others take the risk and say, okay, a lower coverage is okay. So it's really a different risk perception in patients. And this is, of course, important because of the side effects, the potential side effects, how much would you really want to risk? And on the other hand, we have many very potent drugs. And of course, we probably tend to give more potent drugs because we know in average patients will have a problem. So we want to keep them safe and give them the more efficacious drugs, but not for every patient is this is the right way. And therefore, the opinion of the patient is really important. And also, like, I mean, there are some things that I couldn't believe before. Some patients really said, I don't want to take pills. I want to take injections. I cannot swallow the pills. I would have never thought that this anyone will say this, but this is just, I mean, you have to ask patients and then you get these answers and then you can adapt the treatments to their needs.
Thank you, Tobias. I think on the one side, we have now spoken a lot about treatment, but I think the monitoring, which was mentioned, and the management, I think is very crucial as well. And Nila, I think patients are not so much interested in T2 lesions and in T lymphocytes. I think they are very much interested in symptoms. Or so, what is the symptom based approach, which is usually best for the patient?
Yes, T2 lesions and all these things are, of course, strange words, and normally patients that don't understand them, but they are interested if they can play with their kids, if they can do their job, if they can concentrate strictly, stay in their job, have earned good money, take care of their family, play soccer, all these things. These are important. And I think you have you as neurologists quite have a big thing to overcome, that for patients, it's very often not so understandable that multiple sclerosis is an iceberg condition and that you can have activity while you don't have symptoms. This is something most patients don't get. And so for people who don't have such a bad MS, you have to explain them, yeah, but please be happy and stay on your medication. It seems to be working. And for other patients who have symptoms and who have new relapses, new MRI activity, you sometimes probably have to explain them, hey, you have to change the therapy. You have to go to a higher level of working therapy. And unfortunately, I know quite a lot of them who say, okay, I stay with the one I had and I have activity, but if I would go to another one, I'm so scared of, and probably it wouldn't be worse.
I think what you mentioned is really the wide range of symptoms, the wide range of potential impacts. And that I think that is a challenge in practice for us, Tobias. Yeah. So I think in other conditions, it's quite easy. You have a score to evaluate symptoms, but I think the plenty and variability of symptoms is really a challenge in clinical practice, and it's very difficult, I think, to have standardized instruments to collect it.
Yeah, and I think it's especially important with these invisible symptoms like fatigue, cognitive problems, mood disorders, that really play a big role in the daily life of patients. If you are very fatigued or if you are depressive and so on, it has a huge impact on your daily life. And it's of course important to report it and document it also later, maybe also for disability insurances and so on, but also to help the patients and treat the patients in the right way. And I think this is of course not really covered in the famous EDSS, so our neurostatus. I mean, there you have mainly the neurological symptoms and the other symptoms like fatigue and depression and cognition are recorded somehow, but not really in a quantitative way. And for these symptoms, it's really important to have patient-reported outcomes and dedicated questionnaires and tests to follow up the patients and adapt the treatment. The symptomatic treatment, I think, is important in this way. And also to follow up and help the patients also then later on with insurances, because these silent symptoms or invisible symptoms are really hard always to convince insurances that there's a problem with work if a patient is fatigued. And if you have documentation over time and can show this, I think that can be really helpful in clinical practice.
Yeah, thank you, Tobias. So Nele, is it? Do you think there is a place for digital tools to be presented to the patient that you can manage your disease at home, or that you can measure functions continuously at home? Is it a perspective?
Absolutely. I think there will be the future. Of course, you won't get the older patients, but all the younger one, let's say until 50, or if they digitally fine, and even older ones, you can get to apps or to some kind of digital things where you take care, where they put in, okay, today my fatigue is, I don't know, 5 out of 10, or I'm in pain, I have issues with my visibility, I see double pictures, whatsoever. And they can do it right away when it's happening and don't have to wait until 3 months later when they have their next appointment and maybe they have forgotten about it because they have some other issues. Or take care and monitor how good they can walk or have some sports activities or, let's say, movement activities. And this will really help because all these slow going down problems which you can have with MS, as a patient, you might not see the difference when it's getting slowly and slowly and slowly worse. But if you put it into the app or whatever version of digital tool you take, you can see a difference, and then neurologists can change their treatments or bring in something else, physiotherapy, maybe some other medical treatment. But I think most of the time also activities where they train things. And yes, absolutely. And see,
I think you're right. I think it's a tool which can bring neurologist and a patient together. And that, I think, what we have started with is shared decision making. I think the more we have data, the more both know about the disease of the individual patient, I think it's helpful. So thank you very much for this interesting conversation. And so we see that we are on a good move. And we have to change, or we have to develop our future in a way that patients are treated in the best way.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on multiple sclerosis on Touch Neurology at www.touchneurology.com. Don't forget, there are 2 other chapters in the series, so please listen in for further insights from the multidisciplinary team.